Shuvui Pu, Kashtak Nook. This is Captain Kordan Sutai Krandazan, Commanding Officer of the Klingon Assault Group Global Fleet. Today, I'm starting off a series of interviews with the officers in each country that CAG has representation. Now, today, we are starting off with Sergeant Major Kurek Vesai Krandazan, also known as Gudjon Sigmundsson. He is the commanding officer in Iceland on the ship of the IKV Bloodraver. We are also joined with the Klingon that records all these podcasts for CAG, and that would be Judge M. Warriors, how are you both doing today?
I'm great. It's nice to hear from you guys.
Come on, doing very well.
Excellent, excellent. Now, a very basic question to start off with the Sergeant Major there. Can you tell us who you are, as in who you are as Gudjon Sigmundsson in Iceland, and just a little bit about who Sergeant Major Kurek is?
Okay, my name is Gudjon. Of course, all Americans get my name wrong, but yeah, that's okay. Gudjon is okay. I'm half Icelandic, half American. I live, of course, in Iceland. I lived here for about 20, 30 years. I'm 51 years old. I belong to the Ásatrú, the Northern Pagan religion. I've been part of Viking reenactments a lot for about the last 15 years. I've actually been part of a CAG for about 20 years, but not actively. But, well, I think that's just about it, what I can say.
All right, then. That's good enough. Good enough. Sergeant Major, can you tell us what got you interested in science fiction fandom, just in general?
In general? Well, the thing is, my first sci-fi experience was with a Japanese sci-fi movie. My older brother, he tortured me because he had a babysit, so he tortured me to go to a Japanese sci-fi movie that were just one-off show here in Iceland. So after that, by the way, being 7 years old and going to a sci-fi movie where the aliens pull their faces off, that's scary. So I basically got scared into being a sci-fi fan. After that, I started to watch we had this TV here in Iceland called From the Base, American Base here. So as kids, we grew up with sneaking off and watching the TV, and most of the TV shows that were shown here, there was old series. So I grew up with old series, and it was fantastic.
Yes, yes. Same thing here. You know, growing up on the original series after it went into a syndication in the early 70s, and thankfully my mother, you know, she was a Trekkie. Like most women her age back then, with William Shatner on TV, I'm sure that was a major contributing factor, of course. Okay, good, Yen. Then, what got you interested in Klingons, and what got you interested in playing a Klingon?
Well, the thing is, my first TV show that I really got stuck into Klingons was Trouble with Tribbles, like most of them. Of course, in my culture, the Viking culture here in Iceland is something that is very similar to Klingon culture. So I grew up with it here, so both in school and also in my grandparents and parents. It was, of course, everybody knows that the Vikings were a warrior culture. Ocean-going warriors, and I'm really into history. So when I got into, after watching the first shows with the Klingons, I got really interested in the similarities. So that really just got me stuck on Klingons.
Very good, I see. You mentioned that the Klingons are very much reminiscent of the Viking warrior culture. Explorers. They were explorers, the Vikings. They were going in different directions in the seaways that most civilizations at their time were not going. What else do you find similar between the Viking cultures and the Klingon culture that we have seen in the episodes, in the movies?
The thing is, the Vikings were never afraid of anything. We were always strong. We never were afraid to show that we are there. The great thing that is similar with the Klingons and the Vikings is that these are the people that never were afraid to go where they had to go. They were merchants, explorers, warriors, great warriors, and the strong ancestry, family meant everything to them. So basically, that's what I really love about the Klingons. Strong in what we do. We're never afraid.
I see. Very good.
We have a sense of humor. That's the best part is that Viking warriors, they were always poets, cook. When you had a Viking party, you had a party, just the same way as the Klingons had. So, you know, go to a Viking party, go to a Klingon party, you see the same thing. So where do I start? I'm a huge Dune fan. I love Star Wars, of course. Everybody, you know, if you're into Star Trek, you always get stuck into Star Wars. I'm a huge Doctor Who fan, of course. I love Battlestar Galactica. I really love Battlestar Galactica, the old one, not the new one. The new one doesn't have the charm that the old one had. Stargate, all of them. It's like with Doctor Who. I'm a huge Tom Baker fan. I mean, I grew up with Tom Baker. Basically, Tom Baker was the thing that got me stuck on Doctor Who. His sense of humor, the way he did, the way he behaved. When in trouble, give the enemy a jelly bean.
Same thing. I'm not really big into Doctor Who as much as my wife is, but I remember growing up, again, my mother liked science fiction, and she also was watching Tom Baker as a doctor. And I think when the doctor was on American TV at the time in the 70s, I think that Tom Baker is the quintessential doctor when it comes to American fans. I believe he was the most widely seen way before the previous doctors. And the BBC really made a huge contribution to science fiction in general, because as we all know, Doctor Who has preceded Star Trek, I believe, by 2 years in production. So we have to give credit where credit is due. So thank you, UK, for giving us Doctor Who.
Now, I think the Doctor Who actually helped with the UK fans to become Trekkie.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yes, I don't know when Star Trek premiered in the UK or even overseas for that matter. And I believe Doctor Who did pave the way for a lot of sci-fi closet cases, so to speak. And, you know, at the time, sci-fi wasn't really considered real literature. I mean, we had, you know, Jules Verne and all those authors from the pre-1950 era. But it wasn't until the era of Doctor Who and manned missions to the moon and all that truly the proliferation of science fiction finally got the kickstart that it needed. And then finally, slowly, getting mainstream there. So again, you know, thank you, UK, for giving us all the Doctor Who. Now, getting a little bit specific, Gudjon, Sergeant Major, who would you say is your favorite Klingon?
My favorite Klingon? Okay. I'm going to have to get biased there, because really, since I met the guy, and he's a really great person, and it's General Martok.
Yes.
I met him at a convention in 2008, where we were at the unnamed science fiction Star Trek fan club. So he came into the room, and he saw us, about five or six of us sitting down at a table. We had a huge beers, a load of beers on our table. He looked at us and went, I'm sitting down here. So after drinking almost all of the beers and being nagged with the other fans that he had to go around and talk to somebody else, he was going, no, I'm sitting at the table of the Icelanders. We are going to, I'm going to go to Iceland. So Hester, he's a really fun guy. So and of course in the TV show itself, he is awesome. The way he portrays the character is a true Klingon.
Yes, definitely a Klingon's Klingon. As we all know, coming from Kefa lowlands, a nobody, getting into the military. He was denied officer membership by the Dahar Master Corps, but he worked his way up. You know, the true and tried method of doing so, battlefield commissions. And he has seen it all. He has done it all in the Klingon Defense Forces. And truly a leader who goes by the axiom, I would not ask my men to do something I have not done first. So, yes, he truly brings to life the warrior spirit in General Martok. So, yes, J.G. Hertzler, wonderful actor, everything that I've seen him in outside of Trek as well. But Gujan, there's something that he owes you, is there not?
Yeah, well, that beer thing, yeah. Well, he has been promising to come to Iceland to a convention, so... and he does only owe us a couple of beers for that one. And like I said, he almost changed all our beers at the table. So
well, Kalef's...
I hope he doesn't hear this. So we're going to nail him down, and he better bring some beer.
Well, Kalef's willing, that day will come, truly. Now, we spoke of your favorite Klingon actor. What is your favorite Klingon episode, would you say?
Well, like I said, my favorite, the first one that I ever saw a Klingon that I actually loved was, of course, In Trouble with Tribbles. The garbage cow thing, that really got me off.
Yes, I don't think there's a Klingon out there in fandom that watches that episode, and when they are in the bar there, and the commander, the second in command, portrayed wonderfully by Michael Pataki, Bless His Soul, he's confronting Scotty, and I don't think there's any Klingon out there that does not repeat the same words that Michael Pataki says as he's saying them right on the TV screen. My wife, she has to tell me to shut up or throw things at me as I'm parroting what Michael Pataki is saying on the screen. She hates when I do that too. So yes, definitely. Yeah. One of the most memorable scenes in all of Trek fandom. Definitely.
Well, I get into the same trouble with that, because every time I watch that show, you start to say the words. You can't stop yourself. You just
exactly. You do have, even Kirk's lines when he's dressing down the file of officers in front of him, and you know people are saying, "I don't know, sir," and you have to repeat his lines when he says the same thing with that drawl that he has. "I don't know, sir." So yeah, it has to be everybody's favorite episode, definitely, definitely. All right, Sergeant Major, you mentioned this club that you belong to, Starfleet International. But for a group that has been around for 30 years and a group that has 1,000-plus members worldwide, well, besides those glorious figures, what attracted you to the Klingon Assault Group?
Well, actually, the funny thing is, when the first time I got to know Trekdom in the the States. I was visiting my younger brother and my mother that lived in Tennessee. So my younger brother, he dragged me off to a meeting with guys from Starfleet International. But at the same meeting, we decided to go to a mall because they had they were going to be showing at the movie theater at the mall one of the movies. I can't remember which one. I'm 51 years old, so I forget stuff. But at that movie theater, we actually, because we were all in costumes, we had trouble. We had problems with guys that were they were picking us. So they were going, "Oh, you look stupid. You look silly because you're in uniform. Yeah, you must be geeks. You must be nerds." So, but there was a Klingon. There was a couple of Klingons there in costume also. So when they walked up to those guys and told, "Leave those kids alone," those guys backed off. And I got to know one of the guys pretty well. So and I started to talk to them. I got invited to a party with Klingons, which was, by the way, I can't speak of because same thing with Viking parties. We have this rule that what happens in the party stays at the party.
Stays at the party.
I got, you know, we got really into doing some stuff that, you know, and I got introduced to this this girl, a woman that, you know, okay, you're going to become a Klingon. Okay, now I'm going to introduce you into CAG. So I actually got, I don't really know how to say this, but, you know, between her costume and her face, yeah, that's how I got introduced into Star Trek, into Klingon CAG.
So it was a female warrior with her feminine wiles talk you into joining CAG.
Yeah.
Okay, good enough for me. Of course, you know, all the Klingon women are glorious. So yeah, that's a good inducement right there, definitely.
Yeah, all but right. But the thing is, I didn't get active until you talked to me some time ago. I was in.
Oh, I think that was 2 years ago. Oh, good, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only I was so busy with Starfleet that I was always, I had one foot in CAG, but I was in about 20 years. I was in Starfleet International. I became a Rear Admiral. I was a regional coordinator for 7 or 8 years. And during that time, I was planning to retire and do the fun things, join CAG again, do something.
Yes, that's very impressive. Very impressive indeed. Now, when we talk about the Sergeant Major there, Sergeant Major Kurek, what made you choose this CAG persona for yourself?
Well, the basic story behind him, like we, of course, we all who joined CAG, we always have a backstory, even when you join another starter club. So my backstory basically is that he was born on Kronos, of course. His family is too small to be noticed, so he joined up as the prison camp at Rurapente. The reason why I always tied my character to Rurapente, because I live in Iceland, where the winters are cold. You see those things that are in the movie here, that certain movie. So snow, cold, and things like that. I mean, I recommend everybody to take a look at what Iceland looks in the winter. So you would actually, believe me, you will be amazed. It's almost the same.
Well, it wouldn't be called Iceland for nothing, so of course. Now, Sergeant Major character there, what would be your biggest challenges portraying your Sergeant Major?
Staying in character. That has always been difficult. When you go to the convention and stuff, it's always difficult to stay as a Klingon, because the main thing that has been keeping me back of being a real Klingon is my sense of humor. Well, it has also helped, but in a way that when you are you go to a, you know, we are the stars of Star Trek. So when we show up, everybody looks at you. So you either got to be the mean one, or you got to be the one who laughs and has fun. But that is the greatest challenge for all of us when we are in costume. How to behave, what to do. When somebody comes up to you and says, "Hi, you're a Klingon," what do you say to him? So Most of the time, I portrayed myself as being a mean guy with a sense of humor. I don't, you know. So that's the main challenge here, is trying to get the people also here that are joining up in the club to do the same. Create your own character. Have fun.
Yes. Yes, I believe that that might be a challenge for some cagsters out there. You know, as we've seen with even with the Dahar Masters, when they were just regular ship commanders in TOS, we saw three types of Klingons that now everything is based off of. We saw Commander Kor, and he strikes me as, again, the character that I've seen it all, I've done it all, nothing's going to faze me. But to me, he also seems the most urbane and very cosmopolitan. He's slick in a sophisticated way. And yeah, he can look at a character like Kirk and basically with his eyes just saying, Kirk, you do not impress me. Now, how many Klingons or beings for that matter can do that just with their eyes? All right. To me, that's Kor, the Dahar Master.
Yeah.
And then we see Commander Koloth. He does a wonderful job. William Campbell, all three of them, you know, restless souls. But he does it so tongue-in-cheek that you can't help but love what he did, even though he had the least amount of airtime for any of those Klingons. And to be recognized 53 years later as a Dahar Master, you know, obviously he played it to such a resounding impact on Klingon fandom that people say that, yeah, again, another Dahar Master in our midst. And then we have the dangerous Commander Kang. You know, he's very straightforward, and he knows just, again, by his eyes, and of course that beautiful voice that he had, you knew you were in the presence of danger if you did things the wrong way. And again, to have been raised to the level of Dahar Master, and then to transfer all that history to the time era of DS9, and even though they're 100 plus years old Klingons, you know there is danger in front of you in these three Klingons. So, and again, all the Klingons that we saw in TNG and DS9, the ways they conduct themselves to the second in command of the Pak when Riker was on board, you see Klingons laughing and very wholeheartedly laughing and enjoying themselves off duty hours during their meal time. And then you see glimpses of the home world and just makes you want to dig in more to the Klingon persona. So, yeah, we can be in a convention scene. We can be mean but approachable, funny, tongue-in-cheek, very cosmopolitan or urbane. So, yes, because of the talent of all the actors that have portrayed our race, they've given us so much to launch off of to get into our personas. Truly a blessing to have all these actors at Paramount's and CBS's disposal. So again, thank you to all those actors and actresses that we have seen playing Klingons. Now, that was a challenge for you say that's a challenge for you, Sergeant Major. What it is that you like about portraying your Sergeant Major persona?
Well, you know, there's one thing I got to throw in there before we start on that one. When you put on your... This is for all the cagsters out there. When you put on your costume, do you actually change your voice? Because I know I do. my voice becomes more deeper, and it's really funny when you do that. It just happens.
Yep.
Because
yep.
You have to be the warrior. You can't be the wimpy one.
Well, that's a good point there. Thank you, Sergeant Major.
Yeah. So Okay, the question again. I'm sorry.
What is it that you like about playing your persona?
I like to see people when I go to conventions or I go to premieres. I like seeing and watching the people enjoy themselves. Okay, here's a Klingon. Wow, he's going to be doing this. Just a smile. See, I got into acting a long time ago, but I don't do it as a profession. But what I have always loved about doing just anything is when you can get one person or a kid to smile and love what we do and inspire them to have fun, to do the same. Now, don't be afraid to be yourself. Just, you know, go ahead and enjoy what you want to do. Don't care about what everybody else says about you. Just go ahead and enjoy your fandom. That's what matters. That is what anything that in the whole world. I mean, come on, just be yourself. Don't be afraid of if somebody picks on you for it. Just have fun. Make people smile. Let them enjoy themselves. And yeah, that's just about it.
Yes, very wise words. Thank you. Yes, and well, maybe even getting a future recruit lined up as well too. Doesn't hurt.
it doesn't hurt. It's just, you know, you're enjoying yourself.
Yes,
go ahead.
Definitely.
Enjoy yourself. Have fun.
Yes, our first rule in CAG: have fun. Now, Kirak, you're sitting around Kronos, the home world. You have a Rakugino or a Bloodwine or a Warnog in your hand. You're sitting back looking at the blood-red sunset over the horizon or behind Kang's mountain. What would the Sergeant Major just be thinking at that time?
Wow. Now, that is a very good question. Well, basically, Kirak would actually just stand up and go outside, drink, brag, tell tall tales, and enjoy life. Well, hopefully Kirak will not live long enough to become an old warrior, but if so, he would still be doing those things. Fight, sing, drink, brag. Those are the things that are enjoyable. I think Kirak dreams about becoming, retiring as a warrior and becoming a merchant. The thing is, both me and Kirak, we have something special. We like to do handcraft. I do 3D printing and I do handcrafts with both Viking and I try to make my own costumes out of the 3D printing. So yeah, basically, yeah, that would be the thing that Kirak would be doing, trying to introduce what it is to be a Klingon warrior.
All right, very good, very good. Now. Iceland, you know, when people think about Iceland, they may think about, you know, the sulfur baths that you have over there, or they just might think about almost your island's isolation out there. You know, you're over there off the coast of Canada right there, and kind of, you know, all by yourselves out there. You know, there's a thriving country out there, economy, all that, and the population out there. What would you think would be about your area or your country's attitude about fandom or sci-fi in general?
Okay, what I found out for the past, 20 plus years, is that Icelanders, we are seriously open towards sci-fi and fantasy, but as it goes for costumes and stuff, people here are very shy. You have to hide that you are a fan. Okay, most Icelanders, they have either Star Trek stuff on their shelves or Star Wars or any other fandom. But what Icelanders are shy about is admitting they love things like this. So there's very only few of us that really do costumes and go out there, do conventions and things like that. But it's here in Iceland, mainly the most people that do those things are, of course, the Viking clubs that are here. And most of those people are into both or everything. It's really hard because, of course, because we are in Iceland, we only have one store called Nexus. That is the only role-playing store that we have.
That's a comic book store out there in Iceland, right?
Yeah, we only have one. And that's amazing because When I go to the States, they're all over. When I go to the Europe or anywhere else, there are so many of them. Actually, we have had quite a few of them here, but because the population is so small, there's only room for one.
Wow.
And the guy, the owner, which is a good friend of mine, he actually takes time out to make sure that he is the only one. So
I see.
That's the good part, also the bad part.
Okay, well, a shout out to that gentleman and his store out there in Iceland that keeps the population up to date with science fiction out there. The store is called Nexus. I'm sure we're all familiar with that term. And maybe check him out. You know, see what he's got. Say, hello, how are you doing? We've heard about you. And just give him a little bit of your support there. So now, Sergeant Major, now, you said you've been in the Science Starfleet Club for a number of years. You've been in CAG for a number of years. Right now, what would you say would be your future plans in the Klingon Assault Group?
Well, if you really want the simple answer, it's not really complicated, really. I just want to have fun. I want to see this grow. I want to see, of course, I'm involved with Europe a lot since I'm second command, and Frederick, which is a really great guy. Our plans is just to have fun and let other people have fun with it, to try to recruit and get them to understand that what we are about. So that basically is my plan. You never know what tomorrow gives you.
Yes. Oh, just to let folks know, this other gentleman that the Sergeant Major just mentioned, Frederick, that was Frederick Holmbom in Sweden. That is Ensign Tekol Norg Kranazan, and he is the commander of our newly formed Outpost Europe. And what that outpost is doing is basically coordinating all the European countries that if they have 5 members or less. Now, once each country gets 5 members or more, then they can go to a ship status, which is what the Sergeant Major has accomplished just recently. Kapla for that Sergeant Major, the IKV Blood Raven. And how did you folks come up with that name, Blood Raven?
Well, that is a very good question. The thing is, after I talked the first time I talked to you, so it's all your fault. You found the name. So it's the mixture of the name is really Viking and Klingon. Let's say that one, but it's also from Warhammer 40,000, I would say. But it's a reminder of a ritual that the Vikings supposedly did, but it's actually a legend, but historically speaking, was never done. It's called the Blood Raven. The Blood Raven was never done in the Viking history, but, well, it's fascinating that people get stuck on those things, but, yeah, so.
What is that ceremony?
That's where the name comes from, yeah.
What is that ceremony, Gudjon?
That ceremony is where you split the back of the enemy, or the one you want to offend, and his family, and you... Well, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this because this is very gory.
We're
Klingons. This is not a good thing to do. They would split up the backbone, split up the bones in your rib cage in the back, spread them out so it would look like a raven. That's at least how the historical legend goes.
I think we saw that in Vikings TV series, The Blood Eagle, where it was reserved for traitors and enemies alike, that they have done the most heinous acts against a clan, and their punishment is the most serious punishment that Viking culture could have administrated back then, where they open up the back, they separate the ribs, they take out the lungs, and put the lungs on top of your shoulders, and probably while the person is still alive, representing the outstretched wings of an eagle So yes, that would be a very tremendously horrible way to die.
Actually, and isn't if there you actually mention these things to Vikings, that would piss them off, really, because most of us, like in the Viking club and reenactment, we try to be historically correct. It's like the one thing that really gets all Vikings off is if somebody says, "Okay, horns on our helmets." We don't wear horns on our helmets. It's never been done. It's not a thing. Sorry about that one.
Yeah. And also, do not ravens have some special tie to the god Odin?
Yeah, Huyin and Munin. I'm sorry, but I can't remember what they're called in English, but it's the mouth and the mind. Huyin is mind, Munin is the mouth. And it's like the same thing. I suspect the mouth is the wife, is the female type, and the mind is the one, is the male. So, yeah, you know how...
Yeah,
let's not go.
I believe in the English, we also refer to them by name. So yes. Now, Agudyan, you have mentioned so many times about the Viking culture there in Iceland. How much percentage-wise would you say that Viking heritage predominates present-day life out there in Iceland?
Well, it's very difficult to say because unless we tie it with religion, and that is one of the things I really don't like to speak about. See, the attitude towards religion here in Iceland is really easy. Okay, there are people that go to church, but we are in the same way as in the past, in the old days, the gods don't rule us. So as with that, I think about 80% would be predominant, because we always, you grow up with these things, you go to school, this is what you learn about. The way we talk about our ancestry, the ancestry is really something that matters the most here. So yeah, I would say about 80% or 85.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And also, Sergeant Major, you mentioned that you do 3D printing and other handwork. Have you been doing a 3D printing?
Oh, I started about 5 or 6 years ago, so I'm still learning. There are so many things that you can do with it. It's like the first time I started with 3D printing, it's like the future is here. Star Trek is here. We got the replicator. At last, we have a replicator. I can do things. I can make things that, you know, I dreamed of. So I recommend this hobby, this horrible, horrible hobby for everyone. if you are a guy, your wife will hate you because you get all the toys that you ever wanted as a kid, and you can make them yourself or design them in 3D printing. I also do a handcraft, which is the woodworking. Predominantly for me, not right now, is the 3D printing, but I learned handcraft or woodworking from when I was 5 years old, staying in my grandfather's basement. It was his way to get me out of trouble, so I wouldn't do stuff that, you know, wasn't allowed. So carving out statues or carving out small things or pictures or something like that, that's what I do. Also, it also ties up with the new club that I'm in. It's a new Viking club here called, sorry, I'm plugging, I know. If you come to Iceland, come to see us. We are called Vidfurut. We are Icelandic American group, and we do handcraft a lot. So that's why I got stuck with them.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, Gudjan, you and I have spoken in the past about similarities between the Klingon art of war and the Viking art of war. Even at one point, you were thinking on doing a panel on comparing both ways these races conduct warfare. Now, just to let people know that you are a person that is involved in living history, and you have thrown a battle axe for competition. You have stood in a shield wall where a shield maiden might be next to you, or another Viking warrior next to you. And just so, again, the way American audiences are introduced to this way of life is through shows like The Vikings. And I was thinking that it has to be, even if you're in a shield wall. Now, you know, we know the Vikings went far and wide into Europe by the waterways in Europe. And they could find themselves in any given country on a particular field of battle. And at sometimes the European summers can be very hot, warm and stifling. Now, for the regular Viking warrior that was going a Viking, their kit that they would have been wearing. Now, if I'm maybe like a mid-level warrior, okay, he has leather breeches on, leather footwear on. He has an under tunic of wool, of course. But then maybe he was able to get a hold of a chainmail shirt, all right? And then he has his... Now, the chainmail shirt, it's not very light to wear, but most of that weight is on his shoulders, so that's okay. But then again, he's holding an almost... head to waist size shield. Now that shield again is not light. I mean, you're talking wood, covered with leather, and then rimmed with metal, and maybe even thin metal plates on the wood shield itself, facing out. So that's got to be pretty heavy. And then he has his helmet, and again that helmet is not. It's not light. It's metal. And then you have a the inside of it, okay, the filling. And then maybe if you're lucky or very wealthy, you also have a chainmail covering your neck and maybe your chin. So we're talking about a kit, not even counting your weapon there, whether it be an axe or a sword or a pike or what have you. A Viking's kit... Again, not counting what's hanging from its waist, we could be easily talking anywhere from 80 to 100 pounds. Is that a fair assumption of the weight there?
Yeah, just about. But a few, the first thing that I've been in a few battles and I've done, you know, loads of those. The first thing you get to learn is don't weight yourself up. You just wear normal breeches. Don't do the leather. You sweat like heck. Maybe you would have a leather tunic, but no, it's not. It's not a good idea. You just weigh yourself down, because in battle you have to run. You have to be faster than your enemy. So the basic kit here is that you have a woolen pants, woolen shirt. If you want to keep on the, if you want to get carry a ringmail, that really weighs you down. So it's most of us warriors, we choose what we want to do with that, because it's, we use that once for safety. But a fully kitted warrior is exactly the way you sound, where you do it. But when you go into battle, you don't want to be too heavy, because you're going to have guys in front of you that are going to be running a lot. So you would only last about 5 minutes in a battle, and those battles, they last about 10 minutes. So being weighted down is not a good thing. But of course, we have our shields, we have our weapon. If it's a sword or an axe, I prefer axes. They're lightweighted and I can move faster. I got my helmet on, but chainmail, actually, we have a joke about that one. We always kid up those who are starting, the ones we recruit. We let them run around for 20 minutes. If they survive, they're in. But after that, we decide not to put on the ringmail, because your shoulder, when you're an old guy like me, after 10 minutes, you're dead. Literally, you got to lie down. Your shoulders, they hurt like hell. So, and about the shield wall, wow. What I got to know, I was really surprised when I saw the shield wall and had to do a shield wall for a first time. We had this huge, two huge guys. They looked like bears. They were big. They ran at us. They tried to break the shield wall. The only thing that happened to us, we just threw them over the shield wall. And the runners in the back, they killed them. So shield wall, you can't break it. If it's done right, there is nothing that can break a shield wall.
Didn't you mention at one time that even a shield wall can withstand the weight of a horse?
Yeah, but, yes, it can stand the weight of a horse if it's done right. But you would have to have the strongest guys in the front. It is amazing to see it, but we can't do those anymore. We are not allowed to do horses at our fights, of course, because of safety.
Of course.
But I've only seen it one time. And, well, it was more like we pushed the horse in the direction that it needed to go. And, well, a horse running against a shield wall with screaming Vikings, it gets scared. We don't have those battle horses anymore, so it hesitates.
Yes, my wife, she used to do equestrian events when she was younger in her teens, and horses are amazingly, it's not just because of the repetition of the training or whatnot, but, you know, you don't see them running at truly a wall full of pikes. I mean, animals have self-preservation instincts as well. So truly, you know, what we see on TV is like, okay, I'm going to take that with a grain of salt, this, that, and whatnot. It looks good on TV, but, you know, as to what actually happened, you know, back then with those charging cavalry troops into something like a shield wall, and then you have pikes either in front of, kneeling down in front of the wall or behind to catch anybody stupid enough to try to jump over the wall. So, yeah. And also something that sticks into my mind, again, thinking about all the weight that a individual troop is carrying, is wearing, and then the heat could be of any European battlefield in the summertime, and then you have a very fit and healthy troop next to you in the shield wall on your right, on your left. Then you have somebody overhead protecting you from arrows coming in. It has to be the most stifling feeling that one could ever experience in their life. Is that a fair assumption as well?
Yeah, I would expect it. But the thing is, like I said, we really don't do horses when we practice or things like that. It's not a good idea because, you know.
Oh, I wasn't talking about the horses. Just forming up. You just heard the order, shield wall. And all the warriors come together, you know, lockstep, beautifully done, of course, because they've drilled for that maneuver for basically to protect their lives. But then again, you know, just stifling the heat, and then the shield wall at times can't advance or retreat depending on the situation. All the dead bodies that they would have to walk over, and not only humans, but, you know, all the animals that fell in the confrontation. You know, you got to step over a dead horse or whatever. Truly horrific. But then again, that was their way of battle, and they trained for it. So now with all of that, you know, knowing, you know, firsthand that you've done it, comparing that, at what time you said you would like to try to do Battle Tactics of Klingon. Now, we always see the ship-to-ship combat out in space, but we all know there's Klingon ground forces. Now, it's not going to be, you know, a shield wall of Klingons, of course, but what about individual combat? How do you think the Klingon mindset would mirror a Viking mindset when it comes to personal combat?
Okay, that is a very good question, because we've seen in the old series, we all know about the fight that they had with the Klingons when they were fighting in one of the TV show, one of the old series show. They had swords.
Yes, Day of the Dove.
The disruptors also, but they fought. I think that actually, I'm surprised that a Klingon warrior doesn't have his own special weapon on him besides the disruptor. We always see the disruptor. So I've always expected to see a Klingon with a sword, butlet, or something else besides his firing weapon. like a disruptor. So individually, I think each warrior would have his own way of doing personal combat, even in a group combat. You shoot your gun, but when you get close up, you use your close combat weapon, which would also be the tach, the knife. But you would also have to be very good at martial arts and stuff like for that. But I think most of Klingons would also have a training in with swords, spears, any kind of family weapon that they grow up with. So that's where I come to with the similarities between the Viking, Mongolian, of course, and Klingons.
Yes, yes.
You would be, as a child, you would be trained with those things.
Yes, I believe it
It's the same way.
It has been alluded to a couple times, but never really explored on screen. So yes, I agree with you that most Klingons, almost all Klingons, would know some type of personal combat, either defensive, offensive, or whatever. And I believe just because of a budget considerations back in the original series, that really wasn't addressed as it has been now between TNG and DS9. So yes, and of course it's been out in Star Trek Online that Klingons do definitely get into personal combat along with their sidearm and their, you know, Dektag, Detlef, Meklef, Tajtik, what have you. So yes, that combat has been explored in one way or another, either on screen or in media. Well, Sergeant Major, this has been very enlightening to myself and hopefully to others that listen to this podcast. Is there any parting words that you would like to impart to CAG as we close out this interview?
Well, basically what we have been talking about, I can't stress enough. Have fun. Be a Klingon. Be yourself. Enjoy it. If you can inspire someone else, like a small kid or old guy that wants to be something, have fun with life, go ahead. Just be yourself. Costume up. Enjoy it. Don't listen to the naysayers. Be a Klingon. Be true to yourself. Be a sci-fi fan. I mean, really, all of us, we enjoy meeting other sci-fi fans in costume. So, of course, we are the stars. We are Klingons. But enjoy life. Be yourself. Go out there. Don't be afraid. I think that's the best thing I can say.
Yes, very honorable words, Sergeant Major. Well, again, thank you for joining us. Sergeant Major Kurek Vesai-Kranazan, the commanding officer of the IKV Blood Raven out in Iceland. That was Gudjon Sigmundsson, along with Jajim here, Jim Arrowwood, doing the recording. And on behalf of them, this is Captain Kordan Sutai-Kranazan, commanding officer of the CAG Global Fleet. And to all of CAG listening in, to CAG and CAG Global Fleet, Kapla!
Kapla!